There has been a troubling sign that the recession is a she-cession, that women's jobs are more severely impacted than those of men. Now they're coming back to work, but at a much slower pace than any other group.
I think that there are economic reasons as well as social ones that the mother tends to be the one who stays home when it becomes really hard to combine taking care of children and working. In Canada, we're doing a few things to push against that.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Today we hear Canada's Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, and IMF Managing Director, Kristalina Georgieva, talk about gender equality. Freeland is also Canada's first ever female finance minister, and her budget released in April includes measures to help more women enter Canada's workforce and address gender inequality.
Chrystia earned prominence and very high marks for stellar performance in her previous positions, especially as Canada's foreign affairs minister and beforehand as international trade minister. This is when I met her for the first time. And is now deploying the same energy, the same determination to chart the Canadian economy on a path to recovery from the COVID-induced recession. Chrystia has always been a strong voice for women. At a G20 meeting recently, speaker after speaker after speaker forgot that there is more than 50% of the population women until her turn came. And today we will learn straight from her how Canada is spearheading work on gender budgeting and what it means to have a coherent gender strategy effectively aligned with the budget process. Welcome, Chrystia. And my question first is about your own experience. You're a mother of three children. You have had to handle your job and your family. What lessons you have drawn for gender budgeting out of it?
First of all, Kristalina, it is so nice to see you. And thank you very, very much for hosting this conversation. I also really smiled when you referred to that G20 meeting. I'm glad you remembered and you noticed. And it was really, really striking for me that we got through about 20 interventions before someone said, hey, women are part of the economy and women are part of the COVID recession. And you know what? We have a saying here in Canada, add women, change politics. And I really feel I'm seeing that happening right now on the international stage. Having you as the managing director of the IMF, having Christine Lagarde at the ECB, having Janet Yellen as Secretary of the Treasury, I feel like there's a little bit of a sisterhood in international finance, and it's making a difference. It's easier to raise what might have traditionally been called women's issues when there's another woman at the table to say, hey, guys, this is an economic issue. So thanks for pointing that out. In terms of me, it's true. I have three children. My youngest was 10 years old when COVID first hit. And I won't lie to people. It has been hard. I think the hardest thing has been online school, especially for my youngest, who initially really, really struggled. That was a hard transition. And what was heartbreaking for me was I was so busy with my job, I couldn't really help him. And, he actually pulled himself together and is doing really well. But that is hard. Oh, and the other thing that I will say, my other COVID working mother reflection is, Kristalina, I think I have the messiest house in Canada, possibly in the world. That is the aspect of my domestic life, which has gone completely to pieces. Your question does make me think about something else, which is even as, you know, I've been struggling after a hard day at work to load the dishwasher and maybe feeling a little bit sorry for myself, I have thought about the women in Canada, and I would say the women around the world, mothers working a low-wage job, struggling to get through COVID. And in Canada, those are the people who are the hardest hit. And it has been a triple challenge because they are very often the essential workers who, unlike me, right, and unlike you, have had to go out, expose themselves to COVID danger to do their jobs, have not been able to be at home as their own children have been struggling with things like virtual schooling, as mine have been. Some of them have gotten sick, and that has been a real challenge to self-isolate in a home that is not that big. So, you know, in Canada, and I think that the data shows this is a pretty common situation, you know, the single group of people who have been the hardest hit by this are low-wage working mothers. And in putting together our budget, one of our starting points was we have to lift this group up in order to restart our whole economy.
I want to go a little bit deeper on the Canadian experience with gender-based budgeting. You have been ahead of many other countries in saying we have to integrate women into the budgeting process if we want women to contribute fully to the economy. And one thing I noticed that may be of interest to other policymakers, to our audience, is that you went for a women-only task force to help you as you budget in a way that is inclusive for women. So can you tell us a little bit more about the task force?
Yeah, we did convene a task force on women and the economy, co-chaired by me and my associate minister of finance, Mona Fortier. And that task force and our GB Plus approach to all policymaking in Canada have been really, really helpful to me. You know, if you don't measure something, you often don't actually take it into account. And so many of the traditional metrics and traditional approaches to looking at the economy don't really focus on and don't really count women. And so creating a structure in our policymaking that does that has been really, really helpful. In terms of our task force on women in the economy, many specific policy recommendations have come out from that group. When I first invited women to join that group, one of them said to me, "Is this going to be women only?" And I said, "You know what? Yeah, it is." And she said, "Well, why is that?" And I said to her, "You know, there are so many groups." This was a senior woman executive in Canada. And I said to her, "You know, you and I both sit in so many groups and throughout our careers have been at so many tables where we are the only woman present." I said, "Isn't that true?" And she said, "Yeah, it's true." So I said, "You know what? Just for once, let's have a group that's influential, that is women talking to women." And I'm actually really, really glad we made that decision. It's been, I would say the single most important thing that that group has done for me, and I want to, if they're watching, I want to say thank you very much, members of our task force, is helped me to have the courage of my convictions. It can still be hard, Kristalina, to get past some of the mansplaining and to be unapologetic and unashamed about saying, "You know what? Yeah, this policy is a feminist policy. It's a social policy, but it is actually an economic policy. It is actually going to drive jobs and growth." And, you know, I would say that for me, the key example is in our budget, we are putting a big emphasis on early learning and childcare. one of the centerpiece policies. We are committing $30 billion, and for Canada, that's a lot of money, over 5 years, and $9 billion a year ongoing, built into the fiscal framework, to build a universal, affordable system of early learning and childcare across Canada. And our ambition is that 5 years from now, every Canadian will be able to have access to high quality early learning and childcare for an average of $10 a day. That is a big commitment. And as finance minister, I see that as a tremendous driver of long-term economic growth for Canada. We see this as the economic policy that will kind of boost in a step change Canada's economic capacity more than anything Canada has done since the NAFTA free trade agreement with the United States. So, you know, I say it is good feminist policy, but it is also good economic policy. And how the Women's Task Force has helped me there is they have been passionate in their agreement. And that's really useful because there still can be a bias to kind of say, well, real infrastructure investment that drives real jobs and growth, that has to be physical infrastructure. It has to be something done by, you know, men wearing hard hats and gloves, you know, building a bridge. That's an infrastructure investment that's going to drive economic growth. Building a daycare center, that's just, you know, for the ladies. That's not actually real economic policy. And you and I know that's not the case. Building a daycare center is a huge driver of economic growth for us in Canada. We've already seen it in Quebec, which has a system of affordable early learning and childcare universally across the province. And they have seen it has boosted women's labor force participation and boosted economic growth. So we know it works, but there's still, you know, that bias in policymaking. And I would encourage everyone, women as well as men who are policymakers, try to set up some structures that help you to push against that bias, because it can be hard to do it by yourself.
Exactly what we are doing at the fund. One of the fantastic things about the IMF is it has these very smart economists that are in relentless pursuit of discovering new sources of growth. And not a big surprise, one of the big sources of growth is investment in human capital and especially investment in early childhood development. That has the added benefit that when it is done properly with the capacity to get kids to learn together, it opens up more opportunities for women to participate in the labor force. And that is the reason why one of the recommendations that comes out of our analysis of the impact of COVID on women and women participation in the labor force is exactly that. Policymakers need to focus on childcare and schools. As we reopen, make sure that vaccinations go very fast where they would make a difference, and also make sure that you think of social infrastructure on equal footing with physical infrastructure. So we are entirely on that same page. And I want to add one more thing. Everywhere, gender-based budgeting helps. In advanced economies, in particular, by advancing early childhood development and making it possible for women to count on it. In developing countries, it is more around rural roads, safety of transportation, so women can go to work without fear of being attacked or raped, which unfortunately is still a problem in many, many less secure places. But when you look at the budget with this gender lens, you come up with a different direction of your scarce public resources that open up more contribution of women. And we look at it as the right thing to do for equality, but primarily as the right thing to do for the economy. There is no way we can be in a world in which we leave out part of our productive p- potential and then expect that we would do very, very well. And I'm pleased to say that more and more ministers of finance recognize feminist policy is just great economic policy.
This is still a relatively new approach to policymaking, and having the IMF in the vanguard is incredibly helpful to all of us. So I just want to say thank you. Please keep on going. And Canada is very excited about working with you, both as a country, but also in supporting the policy development. And I also want to say quickly, Kristalina, on early learning and childcare, I'm glad that you mentioned and kind of underscored also the learning part, because I really see early learning and childcare as an economic triple play. It is an economic benefit because it allows parents, usually mothers, to participate in the labor force, and that is great. It also, if you do it right, and in Canada, we're committed to building a system of high quality early learning and childcare, that's going to create a lot of great jobs for early learning and childcare workers. And then the third point that you emphasize, Kristalina, is if you create high quality, accessible, affordable spaces, you know, my objective is we're going to raise a generation of Canadian super kids. And I hope that the whole world will raise a generation of super kids. And if we provide high quality early learning and childcare to our youngest people, that for sure is going to help.
I so much agree that we are on a good path. You mentioned before that you're seeing now more women in leadership positions. And of course, it creates a very different environment for the next generation of women to step forward. In my own experience, Christine Lagarde was the first ever woman to lead the IMF. She broke the glass ceiling. I came after her. No cuts, much easier. And there was a very interesting conversation with our dean who said, well, after Christine Lagarde and now you, will there ever be a man to lead the IMF? And I reflected on that and I said, oh, sure, there would be a man. But you know what? We have about 6 decades still to catch up to bring equality. The more serious response to that is, it should not be any more a surprise that women are stepping forward and they are doing their duty to serve society. When I started 18 months ago, we had 25% of women directors. This is the senior technical level. Now we have 38% of women directors. And not one time it would be a decision made just on the basis of gender. It is truly on merits, but with very active promotion to women to put themselves forward, because we know very often women are less willing to do so than men. And I think that the support I got from the staff of the fund for gender equality, for diversity, the support I got from the board gives me full confidence that it is not too far in the future when you would look at the fund and we would be exactly like the world around us at all levels in our institution. What has helped tremendously is, like you with your task force that is supporting you, we have at the fund a working group on gender, and they have taken this responsibility out of conviction, and they are responsible for a lot of the research we have been discussing here, a lot of the lifting of gender equality. And what I want to do now is to turn to them, first to Stefania Fabrizio, so she can pose a question. And with this, we pass the floor to Stefania.
My question is for Ms. Freeland. This crisis has forced many parents to choose between keeping their job and stay at home to take care of children and of the housework. And we have seen that more women than men gave up their job to provide childcare and homework. One of the main drivers of this choice is the persistent gender wage gap. there forces a natural selection between who keeps the job and who takes care of children. What policy can help reduce the gender wage gap? Is there any insight related to your country that you can share with us?
I do agree with you, Stefania, that there are economic reasons as well as social ones, that the mother tends to be the one who stays home when it becomes really hard to combine taking care of children and working. In Canada, we're doing a few things to push against that. One of them actually is a strong measure in this budget, which is when it comes to low-wage workers, women are disproportionately in that category in Canada. A disproportionate number of our low-wage workers are women. And we really believe that it's important to support low-wage workers. I think COVID has really taught us who is essential. And in every society, we have learned among the most essential people are the people who earn the least money and work in the toughest conditions. So in our budget, we have a significant expansion of a program that is the Canada Workers Benefit. It's a top-up to the wages of low-wage workers. We've added over $8 billion to that program, and that will mean that an additional 1 million Canadians benefit from it, and it will lift 100,000 Canadians out of poverty. Also, of course, it's important to encourage women to do high-paying jobs that women haven't traditionally done. And so we have a real push in our country overall and in this budget to do a couple of things. One is encouraging women to enter the skilled trades. Those are very, very high-paying professions. Women and young women and girls often don't see that as a career path for them, but those can be amazing, amazing careers, and we have some programs specifically designed to help women there. The second push is really significant support in this budget for women entrepreneurs. We really believe that by empowering women to start their own businesses, that's a great way to help them, to help their families, but also to create some great jobs across the country. And I'm glad that we're supporting them.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Chrystia. It is exactly this practical engagement that helps policymakers to learn what is working, what is not working, how to fix it. Thank you for sharing this this experience. And now I would like to turn to Cheng Hong Lim. She's the other co-chair. She's going to come up with her question.
This question is for both the managing director and the deputy prime minister. Given your experiences, if you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what would be the advice you would give to your younger self and why?
So what I would tell my younger self is it is okay to stand for yourself. It is okay to make sure you're not giving more work just because you are a woman. And it is totally fine to check whether you are paid equally to your male colleagues. So what is my experience? When I was in my first career as a professor, I ended up routinely taking on the classes of my male colleagues. And then I realized that I was working virtually twice as much as the men. But I never said a word. I said to myself, I need to prove I'm as good as they are. Well, I am. Now, the silver lining of that story is that I actually built more professional muscle and more resilience, and here I am, the head of the IMF. But I still think it was wrong that I just let it happen. I didn't react to it. If I were to encourage women to do something, the younger generation, believe in yourself. We always tend to be more demanding. Women routinely put themselves forward only when they're pushed. That was my case every single time I would go up in my professional standing, it would be because I'm virtually pulled up by my hair. Not because I would say, yes, I'm fantastic, I should go for it. So to all women, believe in yourself. Step up, stand for yourself, because by doing so, you stand for women everywhere.
That is great advice, Kristalina, and especially that last point of yours. It's so interesting. It resonates so much with me. And I have three quick pieces of advice. The first one is advice my late and wonderful mother offered me. My mother was a kind of pioneering working woman, came to Canada as an immigrant child, but got a law degree. She took me as an infant to classes at law school. That was her childcare solution. And she knew how hard it was to work and have children. And so she actually retired 6 months after my first daughter was born and came and lived with me to help me. And I remember once, I think after my second daughter had been born, I was just so tired and I was worried I wasn't doing a good job with my children and I wasn't doing a good job at work. And I was just crying. And I said to my mother, can I keep going? Should I just quit? And she said to me, right now, when your children are young, it just seems impossible. And it seems as if it will never end. But you'll blink your eye and your children will be in school and you'll be past this really hard time. But if you drop out now, it will be almost impossible to recover. And so for anyone who is listening, who is a mother of young children, let me pass on that advice from my mother and just say, hang in there. I know it's really hard. I know, certainly speaking for Canada, we don't offer you all the support that we should. We're trying to get better, but really hang in there. You can do it. My second piece of advice is to women, remember that you don't have to be perfect. I think that women, girls are still much more taught that they need to do everything exactly right. And I observe that men, you know, throughout my professional career, are much more comfortable saying, yeah, I didn't get that exactly right today, but I'll go out and tomorrow I'll be better. And I would say to women, we need to get better at that. We need to get better at making a mistake, brushing yourself off, forgiving yourself, and just keeping on going. And then the third thing I would say is look for sisters who can support you. I'm lucky. I have three actual sisters. And in my professional life, I have found a lot of supportive sisters as well, including, if I may say, Kristalina, you. And that really makes a difference. Having someone who can reinforce your ideas. And I would say, be a good sister to the other women in your personal life and in your professional life.
Fantastic. I could not agree more with all that you have said. Being there for each other, being there for other women, and hanging on even when it is hard. I just loved all the points you made. Recently, somebody asked me, Kristalina, now there are more women in senior positions. Do you talk to each other? Yes, we do. And that is indeed building the necessary sense of a tide is turning that I actually believe is what is happening. And this is why we cannot afford COVID-19 to push that tide back. Thank you, Kristia, for joining me today. It was a fantastic, inspiring conversation. And thank you, everybody, for joining.
That was IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva and Kristia Freeland, Canada's Deputy Prime Minister and first ever female finance minister. You can watch the webcast of the event at imf.org. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you listen and follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce. Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.